Today, the disappearing money trick, or why recession is already here. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. While the technical definition of a recession traditionally is two quarters of contraction or negative growth, I think that definition is frankly irrelevant given where we are today. You simply have to look at the trends in consumer confidence, which are ultra low in many Western countries from Australia, New Zealand, the UK, and the US. And what is driving this is the concern about inflation, which is why central banks are jawboning their ability to get inflation under control. Quite simply, people's money is disappearing fast, and they're worried that it could get a whole lot worse. And by the way, pause for a moment to ask why a 2 to 3% inflation target is used. It has indeed become the convention, but actually, there is very little to explain why that number is correct. The truth is, that number was grabbed from thin air years ago and has now taken on a life of its own. Anyway, with regard to recession, it's worth noting that Goldman Sachs put the risk of such a slump in the US in the next year at 30%. Others put the probability considerably higher, with the risks building beyond that time frame. But for many, it already feels like it's here. Indeed, according to a poll last month by Civic Science, more than 70% of adults believe the US will be in recession by the end of the year. The worries among small business owners, consumers, and others are illustrated by the so-called misery indices, which blends unemployment and inflation rates. The gauge for the US is already at 12.2%, similar to levels seen at the start of the pandemic. And the UK is similarly elevated, and other measures echo that grim view. US consumer expectations, as measured by the Conference Board, have dropped to the lowest in almost a decade. And sentiment across OECD member countries has fallen for 11 straight months and hasn't been this low since 2009. People are getting poorer, said Ludovic Subram, chief economist at Allianz. So this is not a recession, but it really feels and tastes like a recession. And here in Australia, the latest Roy Morgan poll showed a further fall in confidence among consumers, which was once again driven by fears of rising inflation. So let's look at inflation in a bit more detail. Certainly prices are soaring worldwide, particularly for essential foods and fuels, eroding the spending power of families. Central banks, of course, are responding to that inflation surge, but as they push up interest rates, that turns the screws on those with debts. And workers are complaining their wages aren't keeping up with the costs of living, a frustration that's already led to strikes in some countries. And in fact, as 2022 hit the halfway mark, new worries are also taking hold. Layered on top of the inflation squeeze are the mounting concerns about the outlook for economic growth, not just this year, but into 2023. And that sparked talk of stagflation, a nasty cocktail of little to no growth, or worse and faster than usual price increases. Last month, in fact, the OECD cut its outlook for 2022 growth to 3% from 4.5%, with even slower expansion seen next year, and the World Bank lowered its projections, warning of danger for the economy. Markets are fretting about the recession risk. The S&P 500 plunged more than 20% from its January high, and the Stocks Europe 600 is down about 19%. The near constant stream of warnings, along with gloomy headlines, means there's a chance that a recession could in fact become a self-fulfilling prophecy, where apprehension forces consumers and businesses to hunker down and cut back on spending. That would suck demand out of the economy, exacerbating any downturn. Back in 2021, a paper co-authored by Danny Blanchfire, a Dartmouth College economics professor and former Bank of England policymaker, said that declines in US consumer expectation gauges for 10 points or more from either the University of Michigan or Conference Board surveys are predictors of recessions going back more than to the 1980s. Just remember, the Conference Board measure is down almost 30 points this year. And in the US, the National Bureau of Economic Research is the official arbiter of recessions, which it defines as a, quote, significant decline in economic activity that is spread across the economy and lasts for more than a few months. So, in fact, that's a little bit different from the typical two quarters of GDP in negative territory. So this means that any such declaration will usually only come well into a slump, or even after it's over. In the meantime, the debate rages on. Deutsche Bank chief executive Christian Sewing sees a 50% chance of a global recession, a prediction that Citigroup economists have also made. Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell says a US recession is a possibility, but is not inevitable. And Morgan Stanley economists expect a mild euro area recession at the end of 2022. But already, away from the technocrats, businesses and consumers are fretting about their finances and trying to figure out how to keep their heads above water as the pressures intensify. Inflation was already heading higher coming into 2022 amidst a post-COVID demand bump. And then Russia invaded Ukraine, energy and food costs jumped, and the world found itself dealing with soaring prices. A very unfamiliar situation after years of low inflation. For example, gasoline in the US topped an average of $5 per gallon for the first time last month. And given the impact on basics, from filling the gas tank to the supermarket run, few have escaped the squeeze. The tough times stretch to Asia too, where China's zero COVID policy and lockdowns sent the world's second biggest economy into a tailspin, compounding the damage from a real estate slump. And many have to make even tougher decisions on simple day-to-day spending, sometimes forced to choose between the electricity bill or food. UK grocery chain Tesco says shoppers are buying fewer items and trading down to cheaper own brand versions of staples. And it's worth thinking about this. Just as the pandemic and its recovery actually proved to be K-shaped, so the next deterioration may also prove similarly unequal. In the UK, a report by the Resolution Foundation think tank said that years of income stagnation have left the poorest families brutally exposed to the cost of living crunch. Hammersmith and Fulham Food Bank in London noted that with food prices up almost 9%, there is a significant increase in demand. We're seeing people who are on benefits but stable financially, and people who really know how to budget now coming to us. We're even seeing working people, those on zero-hour contracts, needing help to tide them over. And the same is true at local food banks across Australia, according to recent reports. So ahead, we need to consider the trajectory of oil prices and energy prices, and also what central banks are thinking, to get a read to how this may play out ahead. And one feedback loop to understand is that rising interest rates will reduce demand, and so prices may slide. For example, crude oil could collapse to $65 a barrel by the end of this year and slump to $45 by the end of 2023 if a demand-crippling recession hits, says Citigroup. That outlook is based on an absence of any intervention by OPEC plus producers and a decline in oil investments. Brent, the global crude benchmark, last traded at around $113 a barrel. Now, of course, oil has surged this year following the invasion of Ukraine, and banks are now trying to chart its course into 2023 as central banks raise interest rates and recessionary risks mount. Citi's outlooks compared the current energy market with crises of the 1970s. At present, the bank's economists don't expect, though, the US to dip into recession. For oil, though, the historical evidence suggests that oil demand goes negative only in the worst global recessions, the Citi analysts said in their note of July the 5th. But oil prices fall in all recessions to roughly the marginal cost. And what of natural gas, perhaps the hottest commodity in the world right now? Well, In short, natural gas now rivals oil as the fuel that shapes geopolitics, and there isn't enough of it to go around. It's a key driver of global inflation, posting price jumps that are extreme, even by the standards of today's turbulent markets, some 700% in Europe since the start of last year, pushing the continent to the brink of recession. It's at the heart of a dawning era of confrontation between the great powers, one so intense that in capitals across the West, plans to fight climate change are getting relegated to the back burner. And of course, the war in Ukraine also catalyzed the gas crisis to a new level by taking out a crucial chunk of supply. Russia is cutting back on pipeline deliveries to Europe, which says it wants to stop buying from Moscow anyway, if not quite yet. The scramble to fill that gap is turning into a worldwide stampede as countries race to secure scarce cargoes of liquefied natural gas ahead of the Northern Hemisphere winter. Germany says gas shortfalls could trigger a Lehman Brothers-like collapse as Europe's economic powerhouse faces the unprecedented prospect of businesses and consumers running out of power. The main Nord Stream pipeline that carries Russian gas to Germany is due to shut down on July the 11th for 10 days for maintenance, and there's a growing fear that Moscow may not reopen it. The group of seven leaders are seeking ways to curb Russia's gas earnings, which helps finance the invasion of Ukraine and backed new LNG investments. And poorer countries that built energy systems around cheap gas are now struggling to afford it. This is the 1970s for natural gas, says Kevin Brook, managing director at Clearview Energy Partners, a Washington-based research firm. The world is now thinking about gas as it once thought about oil, and the essential role that gas plays in modern economies and the need for secure and diverse supply have become very visible. Natural gas used to be a sleepy commodity that changed hands in fragmented regional markets, but now, even though globalization appears to be in retreat across much of the world economy, the gas trade is heading in the opposite direction. It's globalizing fast, but maybe not fast enough. Many countries have turned to natural gas as part of a transition to clean energy as they seek to phase out use of dirtier fossil fuels like coal and in some cases nuclear power too. Major producers like the US, which has quickly risen up the ranks of LNG exporters to rival Qatar as the world's biggest, are seeing surging demand for their output. 44 countries imported LNG last year, almost twice as many as a decade ago, but the fuel is much harder to shift around the planet than oil because it has to be liquefied. As I discussed the other day, the high price of gas is hitting the domestic market in Australia, given we are exporting so much of the locally produced product, and there is no escape unless the new government makes some significant decisions to keep local supply locally here in Australia. It's interesting to know that gas prices in Europe and Asia surged more than 60% at a time when a local US producer of LNG was forced to temporarily shut down. As a result, US prices for the fuel plunged by almost 40% because the outage meant more of the gas was available for domestic use. So we could change the price point in Australia at a stroke of a pen. And there is a clear connection between LNG exports and the inflationary impacts to domestic prices for natural gas and electricity, said Paul Ciccio, president of the Industrial Energy Consumers of America. Natural gas remains cheaper in the US, but even there, futures have more than doubled this year. That was before the recent shutdown. There were already plenty of signs of extreme tightness in the market. War and COVID may be roiling every commodity from wheat to aluminium and zinc, but little compares to the stomach-churning volatility of global gas prices. In Asia, the fuel is now about three times as expensive as a year ago. In Europe, it's one of the main reasons why inflation just hit a fresh record. To meet all the new demand, that will require a massive wave of investment in supply. And in fact, that's already underway. And it got a boost last week when the Western world's biggest economies, the G7 leaders, vowed to back public investments in gas projects, saying they're necessary in response to the current crisis. The rush for LNG is accelerating projects in North America and beyond. Last month, Gerani Energy greenlighted a terminal expansion in Texas. In April, a Canadian LNG project backed by Indonesian tycoon Sukanto Tanoto got the go-ahead to begin construction. In Qatar, ExxonMobil Corporation and Shell are among energy giants with stakes in a $29 billion project to boost LNG exports. You have global gas prices so high that they're incentivizing the signing of new long-term contracts, said Samantha Dart, head of natural gas research at Goldman Sachs. We are seeing those announcements coming left and right, with a lot of US proposed liquefaction facilities. In Europe, plans for about 20 terminals have been announced or sped up since the Ukraine war began. Germany, which has no LNG terminals, has allocated about $3 billion to charter four floating ones and connect them to the country's network. The first one is supposed to go online around the end of this year. Emphasizing the need for speed, Vice Chancellor Robert Habeck pointed out that Tesla managed to build a factory near Berlin in just 2 years and said it's time to cut through German red tape. First, dig the trench where the pipe is to go in, he said. Then the permits come. China, the world's top LNG buyer last year, is in the midst of one of the biggest build-outs the industry has ever witnessed. 10 new import terminals are slated to come online in 2023 alone, and capacity will roughly double in the 5 years through to 2025. Even with more capacity to receive shipments of LNG and turn it back into gas form, a process known as regasification, Europe lacks infrastructure to move it where it needs to be. Spain, for example, has Europe's biggest regasification facilities, but it only has two pipeline connections to France via the Pyrenees, capable of carrying little more than one-tenth of those volumes. Shipyards in South Korea, where most of the world's LNG tankers are built, are seeing a surge in orders that's leaving them short of skilled labour. They've been forced to look outside the country to places like Thailand for welders, electricians and painters, raising their quotas for migrant workers. And in some cases, all of this means a U-turn away from policies aimed at combating climate change, especially in Europe. German-backed lenders like the European Investment Bank and the European Bank for Reconstruction and Development, which had been focusing on financing renewable energy, have signaled a shift and said they're now more willing to back gas projects. But Europe's bottleneck efforts won't be enough, with calculations that LNG imports could meet 40% of the region's gas needs by 2026. That's double last year's figure, but is still far short of the volumes that Russia has been supplying. And last week, Germany's government said that it's in talks to bail out utility Uniper SE, which is losing some 30 million euros or $31 million a day because it has to cover the missing Russian gas at soaring spot market prices. Companies like chemicals giant BASF say they may have to cut output. And Deutsche Bank cited growing risks of an imminent German recession on the back of energy rationing and pointed to soaring power prices in Italy and France too. And Morgan Stanley predicted the whole euro area will be in a downturn by year end. Gas shortages have sent the price of electricity for 2023 delivery soaring in key European economies, adding to inflation and recession risks. And for some emerging economies, which increasingly have to compete with rich countries like Germany in bidding for LNG cargoes, as gas goes global, the consequences have already been disastrous. In Pakistan, which built its energy system on cheap LNG, planned blackouts are plunging regions into darkness during the sweltering summer months. Shopping malls and factories in major cities have been ordered to shut early, and government officials are working shorter hours. Thailand is curbing LNG imports due to surging prices, potentially putting the country at risk of fuel shortages. And Myanmar, which is grappling with political instability, stopped all LNG purchases late last year when prices started to rally. India and China have also cut back imports. Where once natural gas markets were largely regionally siloed, we now have a globalized spot market that has connected the world's exposure to its fuel that has become critical to many economies, said James Whistler, Singapore-based Managing Director of Vanguard Global Markets, an energy and environmental brokerage. This has never been more evident than in the past few months. So how then to put that in the context of central bank activity? Well, finally, according to the minutes of the Federal Open Market Committee's June 14th, 15th meeting, which came out overnight, Federal Reserve officials solidified their resolve in June to keep rising interest rates for longer to prevent higher inflation from becoming entrenched, even if that slowed the US economy. Policymakers increased interest rates by 75 basis points last month and backed hiking them at their next meeting in July by either 50 or 75 basis points. They viewed maintaining the central bank's credibility to control inflation as crucial. Many participants judged that a significant risk now facing the committee was that elevated inflation could become entrenched if the public began to question the resolve of the committee, the minutes showed. They recognised the possibility that an even more restrictive stance could be appropriate if elevated inflation pressures were to persist. The record was heavy with references to price pressures and why they might take time to ease. Officials recognised that policy firming could slow the pace of economic growth for a time, but they saw the return of inflation to 2% as critical to achieve maximum employment on a sustainable basis. Two-year Treasury yields, which are sensitive to Fed policy, pushed higher after the release of the minutes, and investors continued to bet the central bank would hike by 75 basis points later this month. The Fed's aggressive push to curb the hottest inflation in 40 years has convulsed financial markets as investors fret that tighter monetary policy will tip the US economy into recession. The word recession actually was not mentioned once in the minutes compared to 90 references to inflation. They can lose the battle on the economy, but they can't lose the war on inflation and the inflation anchor, said Mark Spindle, Chief Investment Officer at MBB Capital Partners. Powell's telling you we're not blinking. Officials hiked their benchmark rate to a target range of 1.5 to 1.75% in June, and Chair Jerome Powell suggested they could do the same thing again in July. And he told reporters at a post-meeting press conference that another 75 basis point increase or a 50 basis point move was most likely on the table when policymakers gather July 26th, 27th. Developments since the June decision, intensifying recession chatter, slowing consumer demand, falling oil prices and lower inflation expectations than previously feared mean the FOMC is more likely to opt for a 50 basis point hike this month than another supersized move, but the Fed still left both options open. Kansas City Fed President Esther George, who dissented against the increase in favor of a smaller hike, was the only one of the 18 policymakers who did not back moving to 75 basis points in June, the minutes showed. And several officials since that gathering have echoed Powell's characterization of the likely outcome of the July rate decision, even as recession fears mount. The Personal Consumption Expenditures Index, which the Fed uses for its inflation target, has risen 6.3% since May 2021. That's more than three times the central bank's 2% target. And Powell has said there are pathways for bringing inflation down while keeping the labour market strong, but acknowledged it will be a challenge. Economists have downgraded growth forecasts on the heels of data showing weakness in consumer spending, a tightening of financial conditions, and a decline in US manufacturing activity. And mortgage rates, which have doubled since the start of the year, are also cooling the housing market, and some businesses are seeing lower demand. The FOMC was late to the inflation-fighting game, but they have now joined the battle. Stephen Stanley, the chief economist at Amherst Pierpont Securities, wrote in an email, "The main question now is how restrictive the FOMC will need to get." So, odds of a US recession in the next year are now roughly 1 in 3. And similar pessimism is evident in interest rate futures markets, where investors are now betting the Fed will reverse course next year, halting rate hikes sooner than official forecasts, and beginning to cut rates by mid-2023. Well, we'll see. But meantime, real households and businesses are caught in the crossfire, and whether there is an officially declared recession or not on the ground, many feel they are in recessionary territory already. But weirdly, this may actually help central banks to meet their objectives sooner, even if there is really no explanation as to why the 2-3% is the right level to start with. And remember this, the higher level of inflation devalues existing debt. So perhaps they really do not mind a bit of higher inflation on the way through if it helps to defuse the debt bomb. But in the real world, many people will tell you they feel as if recession is already here. Now, if you're buying your home in Sydney's contentious market, you don't need to stand alone. This is the time you need to have Edwin Almeida from Ribbon Property Consultants standing alongside you. Buying a property is both challenging and adversarial. The vendor has a professional on their side. Emotions run high, price discovery and price transparency are hard to find, and then there's the wasted time and financial investments that you make. Edwin understands your needs, so why not engage a licensed professional to stand alongside you? With RPC, you know you have experience, knowledge, and master negotiators looking after your best interests. So shoot Ribbon an email at info@ribbonproperty.com.au. And if you use the promo code DFAWTW/Martin, you can get a 10% discount offer. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.